Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge. Was it the Cape Drive Time? Welcome back to the show. 072-238-0712 is the WhatsApp line. Query, comment, and or criticize. From South Africa's COVID-19 landscape, we turn to Italy, where over 800 new deaths were confirmed yesterday, bringing the total number that we have to nearly 12,000. That's the highest in the world. However, there is a glimmer at the end of the tunnel. The Italian Civil Protection Department has said that the new contagions are slowing down, and only a 2% growth yesterday, apparently, if I've got the figures right. However, what are the lessons that could be learned from Italy that could be used in South Africa and the rest of the world? In Rome is Riccardo Alciaro, Research Coordinator and Head of Global Actors Program of the International Affairs Institute. He's going to be coming online, but online right now is Professor Gary Pisano, who is Professor of Business Administration and a Senior Associate at the Dean of Development at the Harvard Business School. He's also a well-published author. Professor Gary Pisano, welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
When we look at the whole scenario in Italy, what would you say is the biggest error that Italy might have made in what is admittedly uncharted territory? This is not the blame game. This is something I think we're all learning from experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to clarify that in the article that we wrote, we certainly weren't trying to blame Italy or point to incompetence. This is a very challenging situation where there's no real playbook, and leaders and policymakers have to figure this stuff out in real time. And so I think that the goal here is to learn from it. I think one of the really key lessons is, if possible, if you're at a country where things are still small, is to really act early and, in some sense, overreact early, or what will be perceived as overreacting early. These pandemics are nonlinear, so they start small, so they can look small, and you can get fooled. But once you start to see it, it already means it's going to become big, and so you have to react very strongly early. And that's tough for a politician, because you will be accused of overreacting. People will see a small number of cases, and you're shutting down businesses and closing, and you will be criticized, because it will look like you're overreacting. You're not, but it will look like it. And I think the second thing is really to avoid partial solutions. I think there's a tendency to take one step at a time. So, for instance, in Italy, but by the way, I've also seen it here in the U.S., you start with, some recommendations to not have meet in large crowds, and then, no crowds more than 200, and then no crowds more than 100, and no crowds more than 50, and then you close schools, and then you close businesses. The problem is, if you do partial solutions, they can actually, I think as the case of Italy shows, it can make things worse. And then I think the third really important lesson is get the data through the testing, through apps, whatever you can to make – you can't manage a crisis if you don't understand the parameters of it. If you don't have the information, it's a really hard battle to fight.
It certainly is. If we look at the scenario in South Africa, we are approaching a week of a very stringent lockdown. Yet when our president announced that we were going into lockdown, it was based on what he'd seen around the world, we had less than 100 confirmed cases and absolutely no deaths. And right now we're sitting at well over 1,000 cases and three deaths. So in 7 days, the graph has gone distinctly uphill.
And that, that seems to be a pattern, everywhere, that once you start to see a few cases, there's the delay. I mean, I'm not a physician, but my understanding from what all the experts are saying is, one of the big challenges here is the latency period between exposure and becoming ill. So in essence, the lockdowns that are being ordered now, it's you've got patients or people out there for 2 weeks in the community. I think one of the other things we've started to learn from looking at the data is it's very likely that the number of cases any place is seeing initially with testing is a small fraction of the actual cases. There's some belief this virus was circulating in Italy, you know, well before so-called patient zero was diagnosed at the end of January, and it's probably likely that was the case in the U.S. It's a global world; people travel around for months, and it's just extraordinarily unlikely that, you know, when we identify patient zero, that was really the first patient. And so it could well be in South Africa. These if it's following the pattern of other countries, there's a lot more cases that are just sort of out there. You're just seeing the tip of the iceberg, and they seem like they're exploding, but that's because as you test more, you just discover more.
No, absolutely. In fact, the country is now rolling out a more intensive testing process in any case. And I think a rocket scientist wouldn't have to predict that the numbers would go up. In the article that you guys have written, you have a comparison between Lombardy and Veneto, two districts in Italy. And I think that point goes to show that there's so many factors that go into this. It's really difficult to predict what's going to happen, and in certain parts of the world, certain areas, different things are going to occur, which seem to be way beyond our control, in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, some of this, you know, and folks don't like to hear this, but some of these patterns are random. I mean, they really are bad luck. I mean, it's you can imagine a situation where someone is exposed who has lots of social contacts, goes to bars and restaurants, and works in a very public setting. And, you know, another person, imagine the extreme, they're a computer programmer who works by themselves in their apartment and doesn't socialize a lot. You know, the implications are very different. Or just events, sporting events, you know, a large sporting event that occurs that can become a conduit for lots of infection. Or somebody who is a healthcare worker who is exposed somewhere and then goes into a hospital. And so you can get those differences. So there is some randomness. But I do think the Lombardy-Veneto comparison is fascinating. Two regions, both one right next to the other, both very wealthy regions of Europe. I think one thing that is often forgotten is northern Italy is a very wealthy region of Europe. Lombardy and Veneto probably have two of the highest GDPs per capita in Europe. They're right next to each other. They're culturally very similar. Lombardia followed WHO guidelines on what to do and what to test. So at the time that Lombardia was taking its actions and closing certain towns and cordoning off places, it looked like it was taking aggressive action, and it was following all the WHO guidelines. Veneto was going beyond those, and it was actually criticized at the time. And they were being extremely aggressive in saying, we're going to test everybody, we're going to test as many people as we can. They were going way above and beyond early, and they looked like they were just, you know, overreacting. They looked crazy. But it turned out that was absolutely critical, because they were able to identify cases. They were able to quarantine people earlier. Again, this thing is like wildfire. Once it starts spreading, the more it spreads, the harder it is to contain. So by getting on top of it earlier, they were able to contain it and, very importantly, protect the healthcare workers. That is absolutely critical, because when healthcare workers get sick, not only do you lose capacity to treat patients, the healthcare workers themselves become a conduit for spreading the virus.
Absolutely. And I believe Riccardo Alcaro has joined us in Rome. He's research coordinator and head of the Global Actors Program of the International Affairs Institute. So, Riccardo, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hello, and thanks for having me.
In fact, we've been talking with Professor Pisano about a number of issues. The one thing we're just speaking about when you came on air is the effectiveness of early containment. I'm sure you would probably agree with that viewpoint.
Well, definitely, yes. And I am familiar with Dr. Pisano's article. I mean, there has been... that article, that report, has created quite a fuss here in Italy because of the harsh criticism it levels on Italian public authorities, with the significant exception, I think he was talking about that a moment ago, of the Veneto region public authorities. And I must tell you, I mean, since from Italy, Dr. Pisano's article is very valuable in terms of the lessons learned, lessons you can learn from Italy, probably the criticisms, I mean, I think there is much, I mean, they might be fair criticisms. They would probably sound fairer if they had been done like a month ago. The reality is that it is presuming an amount of potential preparedness initially, which was realistically probably not there. I mean, it is true that Veneto did things preemptively and followed the South Korea model in the sense that immediately, aggressively started testing people who had been in contact with people who had already been diagnosed with the virus. But there is probably a key difference between Lombardy and Veneto, and the difference is not only that of the kind of reaction public authorities put in place. I believe that Veneto was more in the position of South Korea in the sense that Veneto immediately detected the threat of a contagion, the threat of an emergency, and acted aggressively to contain that with very intelligent and smart measures that Dr. Pisano, I think, was listing before. Whereas Lombardy was in a more difficult spot because it probably diagnosed the first case when the contagion was already quite widespread. So Lombardy did not so much face the threat of an emergency, but the outbreak of an emergency. And that's why I think this is a point that Dr. Pisano made in his piece for the Harvard Review, that the Italian authorities, and particularly Lombardy, were constantly running after the virus rather than doing what Veneto was able to do, which is acting ahead of the curve.
No, absolutely. And when we look at this whole scenario, Professor Pisano also mentioned the importance of data. I'm sure you would agree with that, that I'm sure it's now playing a huge role, not only in Italy but in the rest of the world, in trying to understand what exactly has been going on.
Well, definitely data are critical, but as Dr. Pisano himself recognizes, there is so much we do not know yet about this virus. There is so much we do not know yet about this contagion. I mean, the Italian authorities have been doing, I have to grant them this, an astounding effort in trying to come out with constantly updated data concerning the amount of new cases, of course, the deaths, the fatality rates, people who have been diagnosed as recovered. But we are struggling to see the full picture. There are here estimates about the real extent, the real spread of the contagion that range from over 500,000 people to 11 million people. So that's the amount of uncertainty we found ourselves in. And Italy is one country where there is a lot of work going on, where there is a lot of work being done on collecting data. I mean, I know that Italy was criticized in the early phases of the emergency because it did not test enough. But if you look at the if you rank countries by the amount of testing, Italy, I think, ranks third in the world right now, just right after Germany and the United States. It has tested more people than South Korea has, more people than even China has. So there has been a huge amount of catching up. There are some timid signs that we might be perhaps seeing the end of the tunnel, but let me not say that too much. Don't say that much too loud, because I mean I really don't want to sound too optimistic here. But the point is that we have seen the curve of new cases not really flattened. That's not the point, but certainly bent, and we now see a much slower increase in the rate of new cases every day, which remains pretty high. But I mean, experts here are saying that Italy might be nearing the peak. Whether that is true or not, it really depends on a number of elements we might probably not be even aware of.
Absolutely. You tuned into
Voice. Let me just add, because I think this were really great points that were made, and I want to emphasize that in our article, the last thing we wanted to do is be – I know in Italy it's being perceived as critical. In fact, I think what we tried to argue or come across is that, you know, given the circumstances, we think the Italian government did the best job it could possibly do. So the point of the article wasn't to criticize – the response of the Italian government per se, although some politicians, I think, didn't behave appropriately, but that these were mistakes that were almost inevitable from facing a new situation. What our hope was is that others could learn from those. And mistake is the wrong word in some way, because it's, again, it's such a challenging situation, but that others could learn from that experience to head off the situation. I do agree. I did at least done an amazing job. There's probably better data on the cases publicly made each day available to the Italian public, number of tests, and Italy has been incredibly aggressive over time on testing. So I think those are the positive. There are some really positive things to learn, and even the mistakes in retrospect, they're easy in retrospect to point out. But we wrote that article for places like the U.S. and other countries which are now just getting into it. What can they be doing as they're kind of getting into the thick of it to learn from that experience? So certainly the last thing we wanted to do was be critical of the authorities, who really were doing the very best job they could do. And I think if one reads the piece, it's pretty clear we weren't saying they were incompetent. By and large, they were doing the best they could. But I think in Italy it has been interpreted a little bit as we were being critical, but we really weren't meaning to be.
No problems about that. We're going to quickly cut across for some headlines. That's all. Our guests on air on Drive Time, Professor Gary Pisano of Harvard Business Review and Ricardo Alcaro, a health, social and economic expert, talking to us about the coronavirus outbreak in Italy. What can we learn from Italy? We're going to go away for 30 seconds. We'll be back right after this.
News making headlines, government says it remains committed to the implementation of the 2018 wage agreement. Labour Minister warns companies against flouting the labour regulations. Competition Commission receives over 500 complaints about excessive pricing since the lockdown kicked off. And authorities in India launch a manhunt after accusing a Muslim gathering of ignoring the threat of coronavirus. Those are your headlines. Catch the details at 6.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
We're back on Voice of the Cape Drive Time. 0722380712 is the WhatsApp line. Our special guest, Ricardo Alcaro, a researcher at the International Affairs Institute. His main areas of expertise, transatlantic relations with a special focus on the U.S. and EU policies. And we're talking about what we can learn from the experiences in Italy. And we've got Professor Gary Pisano also online with us as well. Ricardo, I'm going to get back to you. You know, trying to sort of wrap up what's happening. What would your advice be to a country like South Africa that is still in fairly early days in terms of coronavirus?
Look, I think that Dr. Pisano's article should be read extensively in South Africa. And, I mean, the issue of whether criticism of Italian authorities is warranted or not, is fair or not, is really now a moot point. The real value of the article, I think, is that it effectively wraps up a number of very good recommendations that all governments finding themselves now in the early phases of the contagion should take note of and probably should follow. First important point is that you need as strong a chain of command as possible. The fact that Italy's healthcare system is run by regions as Dr. Pisano was rightly pointing out before, did have an impact in slowing down and in hampering government response to the crisis. So strong central coordination, I would even call it a military coordination, on the healthcare issue, of course, on what healthcare facilities should do, on what healthcare officers should do. Second, quarantines are extremely important. The one reason why Italy, which right now accounts for basically one third of the global amount of fatalities, is now perhaps getting to the peak, so it's starting to see the end of the tunnel, but just starting, is because of the quarantine, and because the quarantine was national. So as Dr. Pisano rightly says in the article, no partial solution, because the virus, of course, doesn't recognize borders. So you have to act on as much land, as much territory as possible. And if you and national measures are more effective than regional measures, unless you are entirely sure that the contagion is regionally limited. It's just there in one single area. Third, aggressive testing. Not testing everyone, because that's probably impossible, but using a granular method. So you start with the people who you are sure have been infected, and then move on according to a tracing program to the people who, those people who you know are infected, might have met. Of course, starting with their families, their colleagues at work.
Unfortunately, it looks like we've lost Ricardo Alcaro online, but I believe Professor Gary Pisano is on still line. Professor Pisano, your big takeaway for us.
So, great. I think we heard some cutting out. I don't, can you still hear me?
I can still hear you clearly, yeah. My question was...
Great. Go ahead. Repeat the question, because we had a little. We cut out for a split second.
Yeah. In fact, my question to you is, what would your biggest takeaway be for a country like South Africa, which in a sense is still pretty early bells? And as I talk, our health minister live on television has just confirmed our fourth death to COVID-19.
Yeah. Yeah, again, as I mentioned before, you know, the acting early, the quarantines, and some of the points that Ricardo made, these quarantines, tracing, you know, just reacting as strongly as possible early, even if it's overreacting. A point I'd add to what Ricardo mentioned around testing and getting information, sometimes it is difficult for technical reasons to catch up on testing or to get as much testing done as you want. There's a possible substitute in some places that's been used. I know in Israel they were doing it. We're now seeing it here in the U.S. as well, which is you can. It doesn't help for identifying individual patients, but you can identify locations of outbreaks if you can use, you know, to this day and age, lots of, you know, people have cell phones and apps, and there are apps that, you know, ask people every day how they're feeling. And so if you get people, if you notice that, you know, people are reporting in a certain area they're not feeling well, they have fevers, okay, it's not a perfect diagnosis, and it may or may not be coronavirus, but statistically you can see anomalies. Now, many people are who get coronavirus, the estimates are 50% are not symptomatic, but as long as you know there's a rough ratio of, say, 2-1 between symptomatic and not, you get an idea, just to get a rough idea. If there's certain neighborhoods it's exploding in or certain regions of the country, you can get that information, and that allows health authorities then to begin to put resources there and estimate where the problems are and begin, you know, focusing in those areas. So there are substitutes for testing they're not perfect, but they're reasonable, and they can be very fast. And I know in the U.S. we have now been tracking better data with some of the apps that are being used and, you know, thermometers that are connected to the Internet. We get much better maps now of where things are occurring. We are seeing that the social distancing does work. And I think it's, you know, I think that's early on, just getting, you know, really being tough and enforcing that. will be absolutely critical to keeping a lid on this. And then for your health systems to really begin in advance as much as possible, getting materials, getting supplies, forecasting and preparing, even if sometimes you can't reduce the number of cases, but you can spread them out. We're calling it flattening the curve. It gives you more time to respond. So I think that's also really critical to begin the preparation and not react to it. Try, if at all possible, to get ahead of the onslaught of cases that will arrive.
Professor Gary Pisano, Harvard Business Review, who wrote an article entitled Lessons from Italy's Response to the Coronavirus, and our special guest, Riccardo Alcaro, a researcher at the International Affairs Institute. Something happened to his phone. But gentlemen, thanks for chatting to us. Everything of the best.
Great. Thank you, and good luck to all of you in South Africa.
Thank you very much.
The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM stereo.
Whether you're feeling peckish over lunch or racked by